The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It is 6:13. Tim's done some work on the opening bell, and apparently it's the cold weather that's affecting it. It's something with the hydraulic system, Tim, the oil, it gets thick or something like that. Might want to go with a lighter weight oil. Let's talk about the weather since we mentioned it. It's chilly outside right now. Man, it was 41 degrees coming in from Belchase. Right now, 44 if you average the temperatures throughout the area. 60 for a high, and then tomorrow going up to near 70. A chance for showers tomorrow, real chance for showers on Thursday in advance of another cold front, which knocks the highs down to 54 for Friday, 62 on Saturday. Then we're back in the 70s on Sunday. But look, that's what December's like here. We ride the roller coaster, right? Not so much for David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, who joins us from Minnesota. How you doing, David?
I am doing well, and I hope you're well today.
I am, sir. How's the weather there? I'm just curious.
Well, we're going to have a heat wave today. It'll be 30 degrees. We dropped over the weekend to 6 degrees.
Mm-hmm. That's a little chilly. A little chilly.
That is cold.
Did you have any lake effect snow or not?
We're on the other side of the Great Lakes, but we have maybe about an inch on the ground, but it's cold enough that all the, like, the local area ski slopes, they can manufacture snow at this point, and so that people can do some skiing, which is great because last year we had the winterless winter. We had no snow, and it was gorgeous for around here. We were in the 40s and 50s the most time, but part of our economy is geared around winter sports, you know, and I felt really bad for, you know, all the, you know, the winter sports, you know, Montauk companies who really took a major hit last year.
Yeah, Minnesota, of course, perfectly placed between North and South Dakota, for those of you that don't have a map. David, let's talk about, they can tell me something from the production truck. Apparently that's not right, but they'll sort it all out. Let's talk about the pardon of Hunter Biden yesterday. And,
sure.
And I heard a lot of outrage from people with this and that and the other thing. First of all, just being honest, okay? I'm just being honest here. If I'm Joe Biden and I'm 80-something years old, and maybe I remember what I'm doing, maybe I don't remember what I'm doing, I got a son that's in trouble, my political career is done, I'm just being honest here, okay? As a parent,
yeah.
I'm doing what I can to get him out of the legal scrape that he's in, and my legacy be damned. My first responsibility would be to my kid. That being said, how's this being viewed politically around the country?
Well, politically, it's looking like both Democrats and Republicans are not too excited by it. Now, I want to break it down in two more scales here. From a constitutional perspective, did what he do? Is the pardon constitutional? Yes, it is. So that's from a different one. But politically, there seems to be all kinds of backlash in a variety of directions. Republicans saying, well, you promised us you weren't going to do it. Now you've broken your word. And for Democrats, it's that. But it's also, well, what impact is that going to have now, perhaps on Democrats' future prospects? Or does it now embolden perhaps Donald Trump to pardon more individuals? And so it's not getting very good, let's say, political coverage, even though, as you pointed out, I think at the beginning of your statement here, if I had said to you, what would a father do to help his son? I think most of us would say probably anything we possibly could at this point. So from a human or a family perspective, I think it's perfectly understandable, but it's certainly not playing very well across the country politically.
And look, barring any kind of family dysfunction, I think it's kind of disingenuous for anybody to say that they wouldn't do the same thing for their kid. But, I don't know what everybody believes or thinks. I do know this, that at least my opinion on this is when it comes to pardoning the January 6th people, I don't think it has anything to do with what President Trump's going to do, because he pretty much does what he wants, right? Do you really think he'd
do? I think you're right. I don't think this is going to embolden Trump one way or the other. I mean, Trump also pardoned family members in the past. Trump has pardoned
his father-in-law.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the name of the person here. So I think Trump has made up his decisions here. Partly, I think what's going on here is, I don't know, a lot of hyperventilating over something that you kind of expected. You know, someone asked me yesterday, one of my students, and they said, well, he promised he wouldn't do it. And I said, so when was the last time? I think I said something like, I'm shocked that a politician changed his mind or didn't keep his word.
Yeah, that's the other thought I had as well, David. It's like, oh, wait, a politician lied? What? No.
Totally unheard of in our society or something like that, of course. And so on so many scores here, we kind of expected it. The part that I found interesting is in his statement regarding why he did it. He said, well, the conviction and the trial was very political. And that's the part that didn't make sense, because as far as I know, this was his own Justice Department.
I was going to say,
and that's the part, like, well, if you thought that whole thing was political, then – you know, why did your own Justice Department do it? I thought that was a pretty lame excuse. If he had just said something to the effect of, I'm pardoning because he's my son, it's about human compassion or something like that, or family duty, take the heat but walk away from it. But that statement was not a good one.
Totally agree with you. I would respect him a lot more if he had just said, you know what, you're not going to like it, but he's my kid. I would ask you, what would you do if you were in my position? So I'm going to use the power that I have to pardon him and leave the politics out of it. And that way the Democrats are off the hook, right? The Republicans, maybe he, just from a political messaging standpoint, not that they're going to cut him any slack anyway, but maybe they say, you know what, maybe I get the point and look themselves in the mirror and say, you know what, I probably would have done the same thing. But, I don't know about the politically motivated part. I think that was probably a mistake. And that was probably Joe Biden, the politician, not the father, that came out with that, right?
Right. And the other statement, which was, I was watching the press conference yesterday, and at one point, I think the press secretary said, well, Biden had no intention of pardoning his son if Harris won. That also didn't help. You know, it's like, it makes it sound like there was some type of an implicit agreement going on there that I'm not going to run for president. You run for president if you win, then maybe after you get elected and take office. I mean, just a bunch of, I don't know, really bad statements or justifications. I mean, just politically a tin ear.
Be honest. If you could do it, just be honest. Somebody texted in and said, the problem is ordinary people can't pardon anyone. Well, in case you've not noticed, pardon me, with all due respect, the president has a lot of power that ordinary people don't have. That's why they're the president. Because the ordinary
person
can't launch a nuclear attack on anybody either, I don't think. Can they carry the nuclear football?
No, as far as I know, yeah. I don't think so. But I was going to say, if we want to have a broader discussion regarding whether or not presidential pardons are being misused over time, now that's a great one. I mean,
let's do that when we come back.
Perfect. Good.
All right, good. David Schultz, professor of law and political science at Hamline University. And what do y'all think about the pardon of Hunter Biden? And I'm with David on that. If he had just been honest and said, look, he's my son, I'm the president, my political career is over, I can do it, so I'm gonna. And I would ask you as a parent, do you get where I'm coming from, as opposed to all of this political persecution with his own Justice Department? 621 traffic now, WWL. All right, 626 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Tim Zimmer reminding me off the air that former President Trump, or President Trump at that time, pardoned Lil Wayne. From New Orleans, David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. Let's talk about the history of presidential pardons. Usually they happen in January, right? That's when most of this occurs, right before presidents leaving office?
Exactly correct, because oftentimes those pardons are relatively unpopular. And over time, unfortunately, they have been for close political friends, political donors, and so forth. But if I sort of just step back for a second here,
sure,
you know, maybe it reflects my, you know, my Catholic upbringing at it or something like that. But when I think of pardons, I think of, like, what? You do it for, like, conditions of like mercy or compassion or something, you know, that somebody has served a long time in jail, and maybe they're elderly, they're ready to pass away, or some kind of wrongful conviction or something like that, you know. But, you know, that's sort of, you know, maybe our notions many of us have about what pardons are. But for the most part, most of the pardons that presidents have issued have not fit into that category whatsoever. So like I said, they have been confidants, they've been friends, they've been donors. I mean, clearly the most famous of all the pardons, though, is when Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon. And this was when, after Nixon resigned, Ford became president, and before Nixon was even indicted, in fact, he was going to be indicted, Gerald Ford issues a pardon and says, "I pardon Nixon for any crimes he may have committed as president," or basically wiping the state slate completely clean. So we have seen a lot of pardons.
Isn't that, David, when he said he did it because he wanted to end our long national nightmare? He just wanted to put it behind
us. Yeah, he did. He basically said, and maybe it was the right answer longer term, I don't know, the idea of saying that why we shouldn't put the country through a struggle of convicting or putting a former president on trial. Let's just kind of walk away from it. And in some sense, that's mercy. That's compassion also, too, not just for the person, but for the country, to say, let's just put this behind us, put Watergate behind us, and let's go forward. And in that sense, maybe completely defensible on that score here. But the broader point is that, again, what I think some of us think the purpose of what a pardon is supposed to be versus how presidents have generally used it has been far more political in terms of their use than they have been for, let us say, the mercy compassion aspect.
So who, generally speaking, when it comes to the history of pardons and numbers, who's on a leaderboard?
I actually think it's Jimmy Carter, because Jimmy Carter issued a pardon for all the people who had dodged the draft during the Vietnam War. And if I remember correctly, that's in the tens of thousands, kind of a mass pardon or something like that.
But maybe that goes to the religious thing that you were talking about. Maybe he did because he was I guess he's still alive, isn't he?
He's still alive. He's 100 years old. Yeah.
Maybe that's the reason that he did it. But either way, do you think this has any legs or means anything? Because, again, when it comes to January 6th and whoever Trump decides to pardon, I think he's going to do that anyway. I don't see where this changes anything.
Yeah, I think it's yesterday's story. I think by the time we get to January 20th and 21st, we're onto a whole different story at this point. This is kind of like, what is it, the outrage story of the day among many people on, let's say, both sides and so forth. Again, good. I mean, politically not a smart thing to do, but it falls into the dustbin of history.
There you go. The only thing I'd have done is, I said earlier, David, I would have done it when I pardoned the turkeys. I'd have said, "I pardon you, Peach and Blossom and Hunter," and then just walked off the stage. And, you know, thank you, David. 6:30. We'll come back, talk about real estate in New Orleans. Time now, WWL First News. 6:45, quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined now by our friend Arthur Sturbco, local real estate analyst, talk about trends in the New Orleans area. How you doing, Arthur?
Doing terrific, Tommy. Good morning.
How is the real estate market in the New Orleans area?
Well, actually, it's picked up, which is very exciting to see. You know, interest rates a year ago were around 8%. Now they've dropped down to about 7%. So it doesn't sound like an enormous drop, but psychologically that's pushed some people into the market, and it's pushed some home builders, new construction projects into the market. So we're seeing a bit of a spike in new construction in the St. Tammany market.
Because of the interest rates or inflation, or because nothing's come down on building materials, has it, Arthur?
No, it's really been inflation has really hit them, but there just seems to be some consumer confidence in the Mandeville-Covington market right now with some of the infrastructure projects that are going on. So there seem to be a lot more focused activity in that part of the North Shore.
Where does the ban on I don't know what's going on with Mike Cooper and the moratorium or wherever that stands, but I'm just wondering, from a buyer's perspective, if people are thinking, you know what, if we got a chance to build and we want to live on the North Shore, we're going to do it right now while we have a chance?
Well, actually, that's a really good point, because it's really outstanding right now. We've seen a real spike in new construction in new homes for sale in the Mandeville-Covington market. And anytime you see new construction coming online, that's a very positive feeling. That obviously the home builders feel like they're getting enough interest from consumers that it's worth doing some spec homes and custom homes. So a lot of custom home building going on the North Shore.
Is it primarily upper-end homes that are being built, people that have, you know what I'm saying?
No, not really. I think anything from 200 to 450 is probably the hot zone for a new construction right now. So there's still some affordable homes in the 200,000. And, of course, Tommy, anytime you put on a lot of new construction, that puts pressure on existing home sales to price a little bit more competitively as well. So more inventory certainly is coming on the market. And as a result of that, you know, it's even with these interest rates, it's becoming a buyer's market. And yes, well, why Mandeville Covington? Well, it's got to be insurance. Yeah. You know, obviously, there's still pressure. Orleans Parish, we've certainly seen some pressure on home sales there in some of the areas that are really, really subject to insurance rates and flood insurance things. But people are very concerned now that hurricane season is basically over. People are feeling a little bit, I guess, more comfortable about making some plans for their lifestyle.
So when it comes to insurance, is it everything below I-12?
Well, you hate to say just everything because that's kind of a broad statement, but certainly that's kind of a delineation point. Certainly there are properties that are elevated that have lower rates and things like that. But as a general rule, south of I-12, anything in this low-lying area around, you know, the streams and rivers, that's certainly areas of concern. But again, a lot of activity in the Covington area, a lot of anticipation and I guess excitement, if you want to say, above the Bogafalia Bridge in Covington. They're building that new bridge going over, and it's going pretty quickly. So I think people at home builders are looking at that area and saying that's going to be the new growth area when they get rid of that bottleneck on the causeway. And it'll certainly help hurricane evacuation routes. That's probably its biggest benefit.
So let's face it, insurance rates are not going to come down. I don't think Tim Temple will tell you they're going to come down. The best I think they can hope for is for them to stabilize, and even that depends on what happens with hurricane season and so forth. I guess what I'm wondering, Arthur, what does that portend long term for people that, like myself, that own homes in Belchase or in the West Bank or south of I-12?
Well, it's going to continue to be a problem, obviously. I think the spikes are gone in the insurance realm. I certainly hope that. I think we'll see modest increases. I think that there was a lot of knee-jerk interest rate increases over the storms recently, and I think insurance companies wanted to make sure they had plenty of premiums in place to cover themselves. But we had a fairly, I hate to say peaceful, because North Carolina and Florida in those areas certainly would not agree, but it could have been a much worse hurricane season that we had this past year. It was bad, but not horrific as some years. So I think that kind of calmed the insurance market a little bit, that they had some reserves in place to cover. And so I don't think we're going to see those huge increases. I think the reinsurance companies have pretty much stabilized out their risks across the world, not just here. So I think we'll see some modest increases in insurance. But I don't see the huge spikes like we've seen the last couple of years.
But they're not coming down.
Not a chance.
No, absolutely.
Let's be blunt.
Not a chance. I'm not trying to rain on anybody's parade. I'm just trying to keep it real, Arthur, because, you know, when people hear insurance reform and everything else, they think, we're going to go back to 1962 rates. And, guys, that's not going to happen. We'll take a break, pick it up with Arthur Sturbco. We come back talking about real estate. You got any questions, comments, 504-260-1870. Somebody had a question about the equity ladder they always hear you talk about. So you can talk about that when we come back. And the difference between, even though it might be a higher interest rate than you'd like, getting on that equity ladder as opposed to renting. 651, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:56 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Arthur Sturbco, local real estate analyst, as we often do, to get a feel for the pulse of the real estate market in New Orleans. Arthur, somebody texted in about They got grown kids. It's a long text, but basically wondering when's the right time to make the move. And really, when it comes to that equity ladder you always talk about, well, first of all, maybe explain what the equity ladder is and then go into that, please.
Well, an equity ladder, I always refer to buying a home as an equity ladder. It's basically earning money just for living in a house, so buying a single-family home and living in it. And over time, as the appreciation of that home grows, just because of its natural growth and its value, you're also decreasing the loan amount each time. So not only are you getting the benefit of appreciation, but you're reducing the loan amount each year. So when you do finally decide to sell or trade up, you've got more equity in the house than when you started. So more money in your checking account. And I have to tell everybody, you know, you can't picnic on a CD. A single-family home is still the best investment and for security. For most people, obviously, if somebody's going to be moving in a year or 2 years or something, that's a different story because it's, you know, it's possibly more volatile. But over time, you know, the average home sale in New Orleans has increased about 5.5% per year in good times and bad. So there have been times when the oil bust where prices went down 20-30%. Been times when it's gone up 15-20%. But over time, single-family homes have always held its value and maintained the or exceeded the rate of inflation. So always a good buy, and today is probably one of the better days to be able to talk about it, Tommy. The amount of inventory that has come onto the market in the last 60 days has been astonishing, to be blunt. The number of homes for sale, it's very dramatic, especially in the St. Tammany area. So a lot of new growth, and I think a lot of it has to do with insurance, people being pushed from one area to another area and looking for maybe, you know, schools, education, politics, whatever their reason for moving, there's movement going on.
But with that being said, not everybody can live south of I-12, right?
That's correct. Well, a lot of people have to live south of I-12. That's where their jobs are.
Right.
That's where their families are. Let me tell you, Orleans Parish is still a heck of a nice place to live. I don't think everybody's evacuating the place. New Orleans has got a storied history and will be around for a lot longer than you or I, Tommy. So sales there are still solid.
Thank you, Arthur. Appreciate your time and your insight as always. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Tyler Bridges, staff writer for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. Author of several books, we're going to dig deep into Governor Landry's tax package, how it was initially presented, what passed, and what the results are. And then we're going to talk to Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, about college football's early signing period starting tomorrow. A lot coming up. Stay with us.